there was a pretty massive promise on the table that would have affected a lot of people. And now they've just kind of shifted the parameters so that the amount that people were going to be able to save or not donate to the government has now been massively reduced. And it all seems to have flown under the radar. You don't see this being reported in The Age or in the Sydney Morning Herald. It's hardly a footnote. No one's really talking about it. But the amount of money or the amount of money that people were going to be able to benefit from through this tax cut has now been slashed massively. No one's really talking about it.
Yeah, no one is. It's a shocker. It really is a shocker. And I think there's a lot of, as I said, a lot of cons that come from this backflip, where it doesn't just impact the tax that we pay, but it does impact, you know, ability for people to continue to borrow and create wealth utilizing leverage.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to Dashdot Insider, the auditory epicenter for passionate property investors seeking a life of freedom, choice, and abundance. Joining me today, this is very exciting, is Jeremy. I've been practicing my pronunciation all week. Janocelli, got there? Excellent. Now, the reason this is exciting to have you on, Jeremy, is because you are a tax expert and you are our sort of go-to person whenever it comes time to have a look at tax season, that sort of thing. But also, very importantly at the moment, there are some tax changes afoot, and it'd be really, really useful for a lot of our listeners to know what exactly is going to happen, because as we sort of talked about when we were prepping for this, the changes are a little bit different to what everyone was told and what everyone's expecting. So do you want to run us through that?
Yeah, thanks, Emil, mate. Fantastic pronunciation of the last name. I know it's a bit of a tough one, but you've absolutely nailed it. So, mate, appreciate it as always. But I think the main thing we want to really discuss and really share with everyone today is about the Stage 3 tax cuts. You know, this was a plan that was put in place and the wheels were set in motion many years ago now at the start of the Scott Morrison campaign. And it was really going to be one of the largest tax reforms since GST coming into the system in the early 2000s. And as important as the abolishment of negative gearing in late 89. So this was a huge tax reform to take place to really provide a significant boost to middle-income earners. And the whole idea of what they were aiming to do was they're going to scrap the 37% tax bracket, which was where a lot of middle income earners fell, especially as our wages have increased over the last 10 years. But typically that 37% tax bracket fell between $120,000 and $180,000. So it was quite a bit of tax that people were paying in that middle income bracket. Add the Medicare levy on top and you were closely paying nearly 40% tax on every dollar that you earned between $120,000 and $180,000. What the Stage 3 tax cuts initially had in mind and were implemented back many years ago now was that we were going to extend the 30% tax bracket to 30% for people earning $45,000 to $200,000 a mil. So that meant that anybody who was earning between that amount were paying the same rate as a percentage of tax, which equated to, in most cases, for people earning up to 200 grand, roughly close to $8,500 worth of tax incentive. So a huge amount of boost to someone's back pocket through the net income. And, you know, as a result of that, a lot of high fives with professionals, I should say. There was, you know, a little bit of a lending boost for mortgage brokers because there was more net after tax income for their clients to utilize and borrow against. And for everyone in general, you know, having someone who's earning 45 grand and 200 grand paying the same percentage of tax, it was kind of good incentive for people to work harder and earn more money and be able to do many more things with it. Albanese.
Can I jump in here for a second, Jeremy? So it sounds like from the way you described it, people earning between the 120 to 200 grand, all of that income between the 120 and the 200 was being taxed at 37%. And effectively that was going to get reduced down to 30%, which is what people are on when they're above the 45K. That's roughly
in short, correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's
correct.
That's a massive
45,
amount, right?
120 to 180. Well, sorry, 120 to 180 was that bracket of 37%, but it was a huge amount. Like this was a very big incentive, and there were so many pros that came off it. Borrowing capacity increases, significant amount of more money that someone can make without handling a large portion of it to the ATO and the government. And you and I were talking about someone that, you know, we admire in our past, which was the lovely Kerry Packer, or the late Kerry Packer. who mentioned about not donating more than he had to. And an Australian way is everyone should be minimizing their tax. So this was a really good incentive for people to boost up their income, work those extra hours, work a little bit harder, earn a bit more money, and keep a bit more of it in its their back pocket. But what Albanese snuck through recently was the stage three tax cuts got amended and amended substantially, slightly giving lower income earners a bit more of a boost in income. Their tax rate from $18,201 to $45,000 is getting taxed at 16% as opposed to 19%. And the 37% tax bracket was going to be reintroduced with a slight increase of that marginal rate. So 37% now tax is paid on income between $135,000 and $190,000. So they brought back the 37% tax rate, but slightly increased when it kicks in and slightly increased when you move into the 45% tax bracket. The cons around it are obviously that now we have a little bit of benefit, a marginal amount of benefit, but nowhere near the level that we had prior to the changes. And cons around lending. You know, a lot of people are going to receive a bit of a lending boost due to being having and receiving more after-tax income. And now that's been shortened and, for the most part, materially been taken away. So there's a lot of cons, and it just snuck through. It didn't receive a huge amount of media attention, which is quite weird, considering this is probably one of the biggest election backflips that we've had in a very long time. And the amount of cons attached to it. There's a lot of people who are looking forward to that extra boost in net income. I know as an accountant, I was doing lots of planning with clients around this bracket being increased and the abolishment of the 37% tax bracket. So significant amount of planning and pre-planning went in for many clients, I suppose for many accountants as well. So we've had to kind of go back to the drawing board. But I think one of the main things is that I take from it is we shouldn't be relying on the government for more handouts, especially in a lower tax rate, and really needing to take control of your own financial destiny. And that's important that you are working with the right structures and minimizing your tax on the extra income that you're earning and making your dollar work extremely hard for you without having to rely on, as I said, a little bit of a handout from the ATO or the government. So there's a massive shift and change, Emil, in the landscape regarding taxes and finances. And now it's just more prevalent than ever before that you as an individual, you need to make sure that you're looking after yourself, because I don't think anybody's going to do it for you.
I 100% agree with you. I think it sounds like there was a pretty massive promise on the table that would have affected a lot of people. And now they've just kind of shifted the parameters so that the amount that people were going to be able to save or not donate to the government has now been massively reduced. And it all seems to have flown under the radar. You don't see this being reported in The Age or in the Sydney Morning Herald. It's hardly a footnote. No one's really talking about it. But the amount of money or the amount of money that people were going to be able to benefit from through this tax cut has now been slashed massively. No one's really talking about it.
Yeah, no one is. It's a shocker. It really is a shocker. And I think there's a lot of cons that come from this backflip, where it doesn't just impact the tax that we pay, but it does impact, you know, ability for people to continue to borrow and create wealth utilizing leverage.
Okay. Why do you think the government has made such a massive backflip? Is it just greed?
Look, I won't go too much into the politics of it all because everyone's got their own political view. But in short, the government is and running a P&L and balance sheet. Now, they did take out a huge amount of debt. We're sitting at, you know, close to $250, $300 billion worth of debt as a government prior to COVID. And that exploded to, I think, last estimates were nearly close to $900 billion. Now, all is well and good, Emil, in the world of low interest rates when things are 1% or 0.1% or 2%. Everyone can make the balance sheet work and the P&L still looks quite healthy. But as interest rates have really risen around the world and most central banks are having to pay a high portion of interest, governments having to pay a high portion of interest for the lending that they've taken out to facilitate and stimulate economies, the rubber hits the road and the piper always gets paid. And this is now impacting a lot of the bottom lines for many governments around the world. And this is just one typical way of having to increase the P&L and make the balance sheet a bit healthy, which is drawing in more income from the tax dollars. And that stems through migration as well. Another very easy way to increase GDP domestically is to have more people coming into the country, spending more money, earning more money, and more tax dollars and more coffers gets filled as a result. So I would definitely say that this is a result, not for much today, but for the future and the future government spending. Without this, they probably wouldn't have the splurge of money to do many things that they promised. But it does come at the impact of us as taxpayers having to foot the bill for probably, one would argue, very reckless spending in hindsight, given the position that we are in now and the inflation that we've seen post-COVID. So is it a baby with the bathwater scenario? Probably not just yet, but this was a tax reduction that many people are looking forward to, especially as our income has increased and cost of living pressures are still there.
Where I kind of see this really hitting people are the non-property investors. I think property investors, we've been talking to a few mortgage brokers recently, Stephen McClatchy, Onar Serrano, and Callum Rhodes, spoken to recently. And on the podcast with Callum, which was a great podcast, he talked about how the government is relaxing a lot of the lending criteria at the moment. For a while, when interest rates were very, very low, and obviously they didn't want the whole market to go mental and start borrowing everything that they could, you know, completely recklessly. And so they did make it pretty tough for a lot of people to get borrowing. And now he said that there's a general relaxation around a lot of that. Some of the banks are even doing mortgages of LVRs up to 97% on investor loans as well, right? Not just your owner-occupier stock, but investor loans. My gut feel is that the government is trying to find ways of getting money, and tax cuts that were promised, you know, stimulate the economy, buy a few votes, especially in that $45,000 and below mark, right? You give everybody there a 3% tax break, right? You mentioned that they're going from 19 down to 16%. That's something that people might notice on their bottom line. If people are part-time, a lot of back to work mums, my sister, for example, she's working part time. That's probably going to affect her in a positive way. So I can see how the government might be trying to, I mean, it's always difficult to be second guessing what the government are really thinking with these policies. How much of is it driven by market sentiment? How much of it is driven by actually trying to do the right thing? How much of it is there's an election coming up and that sort of thing? But kind of feels like they've tried to help out a few voters down in that bottom bracket at the cost of some of the voters up at the higher bracket who are much smaller in volume.
Yeah, definitely they have. They've tried to even out the best that they can, but the benefit that someone's receiving at 16% tax earning between 18,000 and 45,
yeah, it's not
that
huge.
3% different really only equates to about $381
a meal. It's not huge when you look at the numbers, when you go into the details. It sounds great though, it's very, 19 down to 16. Great.
Yeah, very immaterial. So we always say in my world, don't let facts get in the way of numbers, or don't let facts get in the way of a good story. So, you know, they've tried to say, well, we've helped out the lower income earners, but because we're talking about a much smaller denominator being the income much lower, you know, a 3% on a difference of tax of $18,045 being $381, it does help, no doubt about it. It's probably someone's groceries for 1 or 2 weeks, but that's about it. Considerably contrasted against someone as a higher income earner who could put $8,500 potentially back into the economy through the reduction of tax. But what you're talking about with, you know, the brokers and how you had a bit of a conversation with them, yeah, the government is definitely trying to, well, APRA, in line with the government, is trying to continue and stimulate lending. It's how money gets put into the economy. People borrow and save and then borrow significantly more on those savings. And without borrowing in place, then we do have a very constricted economy because it does rely on liquidity. It does rely on money moving and markets moving, and that's how asset prices do rise. But the challenge is that, you know, when we look ahead of us, we've got still inflation being present in the market. I did see the US market just recently say they've had an uptick of inflation, looking back at significant or consecutive months of decline. So people tend to get kind of used to the economy, the feel that they're in, and then make decisions moving forward that are more concrete with better facts that they have at hand. And, you know, the recent 6 to 9 months of no rate increases has been fantastic for many people. Because it's given people the ability to provide a bit of stability in their money management, and then be able to make more concrete decisions with their finances. I think one of the main things to consider is, you know, we need to focus again back on a little bit of tax planning and tax strategy based on these rate or these, sorry, the backflip of the
that's the way to put it, isn't it?
I think that's the best way to say it without having and sharing a political view. But we need to be very conscious now of tax minimization. We need to focus that if we are going to be growing our wealth and using property as a tool to do it, we need to make the best out of it as we can. So if there's any potential negative gearing, making sure we're utilizing that. If we're buying and purchasing properties in our own name, if we're looking at buying properties where there's an ultimate opportunity to have some passive income, which is what we're all after, it's getting that into the right structure without having the negativity of land tax or potentially carrying forward of losses where you can't utilize that tax benefit today. So there's a wide range of different tools that are out there, Emil, that you can utilize. It just goes to show now that we're not going to get any assistance or reprieve from any legislation that governments will put in place. It's up to us to take advantage and take the situation head on, or grab the bull by the horns, as essentially as they say, and run with it. Start looking at your financial freedom much earlier, get into the right structures earlier, make the right decisions earlier, and get your money moving for you in an environment which is conducive of growth and conducive of extra income outside your normal salaries and wages or business employment.
Right. The lens I tend to look at the scenario through is actually very positive for property investors. When governments are doing a backflip on tax cuts in the way they have, or maybe they don't want to phrase it as a backflip because they're giving a little bit more here and they're just shifting a bracket, but it's a backflip, right? If we're honest about it, it's a massive backflip on a huge chunk of cash that they were essentially going to be leaving in the economy and not taking out to use themselves. It indicates to me that the government needs money. That's the only reason that they would do this. And I think the government at the moment is in a lot of debt because of the reckless spending through COVID, right? Which at the time, there was even a lot of public support for. I don't think there is that public support for it now. And in retrospect, a lot of people are thinking that was a little bit mental, what the government did. But overall, looking at Emil's crystal ball, it does feel like my key metric for determining what's going to happen with property prices is how much does the government need money? And it's something that I'm often talking about on the episodes that we have here. The more the government needs money, the more money that they're going to have to pump into the system or get it through taxes. And they're kind of trying to do both at this point. They're trying to recoup as much as they can through taxes to try to get their P&L looking quite a lot better than it is at the moment, which is not great. And at the same time, they need to be issuing bonds because that's the other way that the government gets the money. And in order to issue bonds, then someone needs to have the cash to buy the bonds. And the people that are allowed to buy the bonds are the banks. The banks need to have the cash. And the way the banks get the cash is through lending. And I think that's why we're seeing a conflation or a convergence of changing the tax brackets, backflipping on tax cuts, being a little bit greedy, disguising it, making sure that it doesn't get too much press, making sure that people aren't sort of rioting in the streets over this massive backflip, which, as you said, is massively significant. And at the same time, relaxing a lot of the lending so that property investors can get into the market with large loans. And with those large loans, the banks then have the money to buy bonds. So when I'm looking at it, I'm thinking the greedier the government is for your tax dollars, the better off you're going to be as a property investor. There are a few dots to join along the way, but that's kind of the way I see the machine works. And it sort of works pretty well. I do worry about inflation in the back of my mind. The inflationary effect of this can't really be ignored. And I can already see the government has been putting out a few, when I say the government, I mean the media via experts who've sort of, you know, been told whatever some government sort of official has mentioned somewhere, and they try to extrapolate from that. They're talking about reducing interest rates towards the end of this year and certainly through 2025. Has anything like that hit your desk? Do you have any strong views on where that's going?
Yeah. So look, I get a very micro view of the economy through my client base. I don't feel, Emil, anything's really broken just yet. I do feel that good business owners are getting rewarded for the effort and the talent and the time that they put into their business. And, you know, poor business owners, and I say poor, I say probably not experienced business owners who haven't been able to pivot, who haven't been able to make the right decisions, who were pretty much propped up by a lot of government assistance. I feel that those business owners probably aren't succeeding at the levels they once were. So that's what generally inflationary environments do. They kind of weed out the weak and promote the strong. But I'm still seeing with the client base that I've got, things are really ticking along really well. Their numbers are still quite strong. Business is starting to improve. There's a bit more stabilization of costs. Labor market's still very tight, no doubt about it. But things are definitely improving and people are feeling more confident and more comfortable now that rates aren't going to go to 10%. So I think that was a big fear factor, and that was why we probably had a little bit of a dip in some markets in the property sector, because people just thought, wow, we're getting 0.25s and 0.5% increases consecutively month by month. When's this going to stop? Is this going to be another 87 to 89, where we saw rates go from about 11% to 18% prior from going 13 back down to 11? So I feel that that had a little bit of a narrative that was playing out in many people's minds, and it never really came to fruition. But as people feel more confident, they adjust. I've definitely seen a steep wage increase for many, many clients over the last couple of years, especially in the professional services and service sector. So that wage and amount of increase of money that many people have started to receive and flowing through is just filling the gap that was left behind through increased costs. But people are becoming a bit more savvy, have noticed a bit more credit card debt has increased, but many people are doing that for alternate reasons, collecting points and other things. So my micro viewer mill, I'm not seeing a lot of pain in the market. I'm seeing people shift on properties where they've made a bit of money and paying down some debt, which is personally nature. But for rates to really come down, there needs to be something breaking the economy. The narrative that you hear from all of the banks and economists, obviously they're very attached to rates coming down and it stimulates a lot more lending and a lot more money flowing around the system. But for the RBA to confidently reduce rates, they need to see unemployment increase, which it is ticking up, but still well below normal, and broken economies, businesses fracturing, and not just poor businesses fracturing from bad decision-making, but good businesses, well-established businesses that shouldn't be breaking. And when they are breaking, that's cause for concern for the RBA to see rates come down. So there's not enough just yet to suggest that rates need to be lowered. I am bullish that rates will come down, but not as much as people think. I think that needle will move slightly, Emil.
That's a very interesting perspective. I think I'm inclined to agree with you. I think there's a lot more of a media narrative that seems to have been promoted just in the last 2 or 3 months, where people are talking about cuts towards the end of the year and throughout 2025. And I think that might be sort of sell the rumor sort of narrative, where it's like, yeah, create the confidence, even in anticipation of doing something that might be helpful. And if you do that, you create enough confidence, you don't actually need to do the thing. They don't actually need to reduce the rates as much, but they've created enough confidence in there and they're keeping things going without having to tinker with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the property market is a very clear indicator of that. We started to see prices increase again in many, many, many sectors and in many, many states and suburbs. And that's just purely brought back to consumer confidence. People are starting to feel confident that rates are probably at their peak. And I think they are for the most part, not unless something really changes in the inflationary environment. But that's the confidence is what's bringing people back into the market and lining up for open homes again and prepared to pay some prices which are above fair market value for many properties, because the confidence is there that they can continue to maintain the cost of holding that property. So it's been a very weird market. Definitely from my personal opinion, I've seen some properties which I would basically not purchase at that price selling for well above what I thought it would go for. Investor-grade properties in some circumstances are starting to become a hot property market again. And we can see that just through significant amount of investors purchasing on the western side of Australia in WA and now starting to come back in states like South Australia, Brisbane, and even Victoria is now starting to show some major signs of recovery, where it's probably been one of the worst performing states in Australia over the last couple of years from a property point of view. But it's interesting. It's going to be very interesting 6, 12, and 18 months. It'll be very interesting to see how the RBA tackles The numbers, the unemployment rates, the significant level of migration coming in, which itself is an inflationary factor because you've got more people chasing less things. So there's different levers being pulled in many directions, and those counteracting forces are really pulling in one and letting go of the other. And hence this rate cut, well, this backflip on the rate cuts was supposed to assist in the cost of living measures, but they've gone backwards on it, which one would suggest that it's taking away some inflationary pressures on one hand, but then they increase it on the other by giving substantial amount of grants and substantial amount of money flowing through, you know, to Centrelink and job seekers, which I think by memory, Emil, and don't quote me on this, but I will throw the number out there. The number of people in Australia at the moment in JobSeeker is over 900,000 people. So it's the biggest number it's ever been, and that number has never declined in the last 15 years. It's only increased. So our social services sector is sucking out a huge amount of juice from the government coffers, and it's only increasing year by year. And throw more people on there, then the risk is that it increases further. And then the tax rates may have to come up even more to facilitate all the government spending, which again could turn into other positives or potentially negatives. It really swings and roundabouts with what the government decides to do.
I see it as positives for property investors. And if you're not a property investor, I see it as a pretty massive negative because the more the government needs money, the more property prices go up. That's my acid test. And I think I like the way you described the micro view that you have on the economy, like seeing actual businesses and seeing how they're going. And it all sounds very, very positive, which I think is very, very good news. It means that we're probably not going to need to increase, well, put it this way. At Dashdot, we spend about $150,000 per year just on data when we're looking at migration patterns. We're looking at various property sales, all of these different sources where you can aggregate lots and lots of large data sets to work out what's happening in the property market, right? Personal data, we don't get any of that because that's not useful when you're trying to identify trends and things like that. So if you're listening to this, don't worry. We never buy any personal data. But when we're looking at the large trends, we're getting information from economists, all sorts of different places, right? And it's expensive, right? It's very high quality data. I'm yet to identify a single source of anybody predicting a rate rise, right? Everyone uniformly seems to be saying we've peaked out on the interest rates. We were going up, people were worried, people were fearful, what's going to happen to my investment property, this, that, the other thing. And it really does feel like there's not a single voice out there saying, yeah, we're going to be going up again in the next couple of months or in the next year. There are some voices saying that we're going to go down, and I agree with you. I don't think we're going to go down by as much based on what you've said, you know, and you get to see it, right? A lot of people don't get to, we don't get the, we don't get the view that you have of really being able to look into lots of people's businesses with, you know, how many years now? 12 years? How many years you've been?
17 years.
17 years. 18, okay, gee, we need to update our notes. Dealing with small to medium businesses, working out all of the tricks and traps you need in order to minimize tax obligations and financial forecasting, all that sort of thing. So a really, really valuable resource to have on our podcast for sure. Now, tax season is coming up. Any sort of broad brush advice for people with the tax cuts on the horizon, that sort of thing? Are there things that we need to be getting prepared for at the moment?
Absolutely. So now is the time where if you do want to look at reducing your taxes, you've got great opportunities to do so, utilizing the 5-year carried forward concessional superannuation deduction, which is a great opportunity to pump a little bit more money into super and get a tax benefit. And there's some pros and cons around it. Again, you should be definitely talking with your professional about it, but that's a great opportunity. You must have that money hitting the super fund account, though, before 30 June 2024. I'm in the present moment of talking with many people regarding PYG variations as well, Emil.
Getting
ready for the PYG variations for 30 June 2025. So we're really looking at their data and getting that information into the system very soon. So it gives them a little bit more after-tax income to be able to play with, to put in their offset accounts or manage the expenses of their property portfolio if it is a little bit more negative than they anticipated. So that's one big thing I'm looking through. A lot of tax planning around expenses for clients, when to do those particular repairs and maintenance, and what's a renovation, what's a repair, what's depreciated, and what's claimed up front. Again, if you've got those little bit of repairs that you need to do around your property, best to do them before 30 June if they're classified as an upfront expense, because I'd rather you get the money today in your tax return as opposed to wait for the following year when you may spend that money in July, for instance. So there are a couple little things that we're talking about with many of our individual clients. We're looking at capturing all the data. So a lot of CGT events have occurred. A couple clients, or many clients, have been selling properties, cashing in and pivoting their portfolio, Emil, making some really good money in some markets and then trying to enter into new booming markets. There always is some hot spots around, and your idea is to have the money moving in the best particular market you can for a longest period of time. So again, focusing on how much capital gain that you've made and looking at potential ways to minimize that capital gain tax, one way being super, as we suggested. Capturing all your data from the settlement statements if you've purchased new properties, Emil, loan statements and loan contracts if you have paid lenders mortgage insurance. So this is the season to kind of start to put all your information together so you're not running around like a headless chook after July trying to find everything. So a good idea to reach out to your accountant just to get a bit of a feel of what is required. So you've got your information ready and at hand. There's some great work papers that many accountants can provide you to, you know, give that level of assistance to help you to utilize your own numbers to make them work for you. They're the main things I'm seeing at the moment around the tax minimization space and also the collective data space as well. The PYG variations, I do suggest for anyone that's out there who is feeling a little bit of the pinch of rates, and you may have bought it, you know, 2% or 2.5% rates. You may have fixed rates coming off, moving on to 6.5 or even slightly higher. PYG variations are a great tool where you can reduce the tax that you pay from your employer, essentially collecting a little bit of your refund in advance instead of waiting till the end of financial year to help with the cash flow that you need to maintain your portfolio. Because in the end, as investors, our goal is we want to be holding these properties for as long as we possibly can in that hot market. And that's where we're going to get our accelerated levels of return, which can then help us pivot and rebalance and move our money into other assets and grow our asset base and effectively grow that denominator. The bigger the denominator we have, every small increments in returns do gross large amounts. So that's the goal that I've seen.
I think for a lot of people, that can be really, really key. A lot of people might be looking at what is their cash flow going to look like with rates being where they are at the moment. Okay, they're probably not going to go up. They might come down, but if you base your decision on the rates staying where they are at the moment, again, not financial advice, then you're sort of forecasting what your cash flow is going to look like. It can look pretty different if you have your PYG variation, tax variation in there. It can change your weekly cash flow by $100, say. And that can be enough to make the difference. That could be enough to make the difference between, yeah, okay, it means I can actually get into the market and get this awesome property now, as opposed to let the opportunity slip by. So I think that's probably the biggest takeaway that I would get from this. Get that tax variation sorted so that you know how your cash flow is going to be looking through 2024, 2025 financial year. And that can make the difference between being able to get in and not being able to get in. I think that's really, really key.
Yeah, and it blends in, Emil. You know, these tax cuts that where the backflip has occurred, you know, now potentially many people aren't receiving that substantial amount of benefit, that additional cash flow that they may have factored into their balance sheet. But you know, this is where a PYG variation can help. You know, that additional bit of cash flow that you receive through the reduction of tax paid through your wages, that could be the difference, Emil, in many people's cases of holding their property and holding their property in a sustainable way. That's the goal for every investor out there, regardless of what you're putting your money into. You want to make sure that you've got a sustainable investment that you can hold through different cycles. And I think that's one of the biggest key takeaways.
100%. All righty. Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
No, mate, I think other than what I'm seeing at the moment, I think there's a good trend upwards. A lot more of my clients are in buying mode at the moment. I know we share many mutual clients between ourselves and Dashdot, and a lot of clients are buying some really good quality properties. And I think that's the key for anyone out there that's listening and investing. You need to make sure that you are still buying good quality properties. It's probably not the market or the environment that we had in COVID where everything rose at once. This probably comes back down to making sure that you are looking at the data, the way that the migration levels are impacting a certain area, whether it's negative or positive. You need to be looking at the macro and micro numbers around the area that you're buying. I think a lot of people forget that property is an investment, and it does rely on metrics. It does rely on macro and micro data that influence suburbs, and that could be as big as incomes to, you know, average incomes in that area, to how many children people might have. And that's where you can make some really good decisions of the type of properties that you're buying. Whether to add granny flats, for example, Emil, is a big one, because you don't want to be putting a granny flat onto a heavily supplied area of properties. Ideally, you want to be doing that in a low supplied area of properties where the demand for rental is much higher. So I call it, Emil, in short, the year of numbers. This will be the year of numbers.
I think you've hit the nail on the head.
Those people who can handle, those people that can handle those numbers and interpret those numbers will do very well and be a leader in the pack for sure.
It's been a lot more positive talking to you about the current situation with the economy than I was expecting, to be honest. I mean, I'm pretty much always bullish on property, right? It's very rare that you'll find me sort of not extolling the virtues of having a robust property portfolio. And I foresee a lot of growth over the next couple of years. But, you know, before talking through all of this with you, I was thinking, you know, these tax cuts, they're going to hurt people. What does it mean for borrowing capacity? Is it going to constrict things? But no, hearing your micro view, seeing so many small and medium businesses and how a lot of them are doing really, really well, the economy seems good. It gives me a much more positive outlook, I think, not on the property market, but on, you know, the Australian economy as a whole, which I think is a really, really positive thing. So on that note, it's definitely going to be a year of numbers. It's definitely going to be a year of property investors. I can't see it going any other way myself. Jeremy, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for jumping on our podcast, and we hope to hear from you again soon.
Thank you kindly, Emil. Take care, and everyone have a lovely couple of months, and happy end of financial year coming up very soon.
Yes. By the time this episode airs, it's going to be April. You're going to have 2 months to get all of your tax sorted out. So if you need help, get in touch with Jeremy. He'll sort you out properly. All right. Thanks very much. Cheers. Bye.